generosity in the last week.
Tory Way, Northwest London, Tuesday, Yud Aleph Adar, 23rd of February, Rabbi Adam Edwards Schlitter. What if Hashem has a physical presence in this world?
Good morning.
Good morning. Good
morning. Morning. Nice to be back. Thank you for having me. So, when I was asked to speak this morning, I thought to myself, I'm sure everybody else will be speaking about Purim this week.
Yeah, we'll get
some Purim time.
So I thought I will try not to. But then I thought Parshas Tetzaveh, what should I speak about? So I guessed correctly, everybody else was speaking about Purim this week. So I decided not to. And then I said to myself, for the last once or twice I've been on Torah Way, I have said over some Torah from Rabbi David Foreman. So I said to myself, I wasn't going to say Rabbi David Foreman this week, but then if I wasn't saying over Purim Torah and as Parshas Tetzaveh, then I gave myself the luxury of once again saying over a very interesting idea, yes, once again, of Rabbi David Foreman. So that's what we are going to be sharing today. So you have to indulge me. And perhaps, actually, we can probably perhaps tie this into Purim as well, but this is actually more of a Teruma Tetzaveh idea. So, please indulge me, if you will. Teruma and Tetzaveh, we have the list of instructions of how we build the Mishkan, the building in whose presence Hashem will dwell, as we know. And I'm going to take a moment to talk about something that Rabbi David Foreman points out, something fascinating, astounding in the actual structure that's been described predominantly in Parshas Truma. Now, what I'm going to say may sound a little bit wild. It's okay, it's Purim, almost Purim, that's okay. It may sound rather controversial at first. I hope you won't kick me out before I've finished, and I hope you won't, maybe you'll even invite me back, I hope, but let's go with it, and I hope you'll see it's not as controversial as it first sounds. So what I want to do is, what we're going to do is something called a Rorschach test. I think we've all know what that is, a source one. Rorschach was a Swiss psychiatrist, early 20th century, Hermann Rorschach. And what it is you psychological test where they show you a bunch of random ink blots. And the idea is you need to do a free association and tell you what it is those ink blots look like to you. I don't know if people can see that. Does anybody know what source number one, what does that say to you? Somebody reading a book. Yeah, probably something like that. So what we're going to do is imagine looking at the Mishkan from a bird's eye view. What does it look like? So that's source two. I've already sketched it out for you. The first thing we hear about is the Aron. That's at the top. Inside the Aron, we know, are the Luchos of Bris, on which were written the original commandments. So that's the Aron, and it's in a section called the Kodesh Kedoshim, and that's separated from the rest of the Mishkan with a curtain. The next major thing that we have coming down is the menorah, and on the opposite side we have the Shulchan, and on the Shulchan we have the Lechem Aponim, that we know wasn't eaten from week to week, until finally it was consumed by the Kohanim and was replaced. And then, if we continue down on the schematic of the Mishkan, we have in the middle somewhere, we have the Mizbeach of the Ketores, a very small Mizbeach. And you continue further down, right at the bottom, you have that much larger Mizbeach, which was connected to a very long ramp. And that would be the Mizbeach on which they offered the Karbonos of the animals, and on which the fire, the Eish, would consume them. So here we have our little schematic. And if you look at it from a bird's eye view, and you wouldn't know what you are looking at, and you were just playing this Rorschach game, what would you say that it looks like? So, I don't know about you, but I would say that potentially you could say that it looks like a face. Looks like a face. Turn over your page on your source sheet, number 3. Right up here at the top is where the aron is. That's where you've got the brain would be. That's the brain, that's the top. And of course, think about what the aron is. The aron is where the luchos are. How do we relate to the luchos? We relate to it cognitively with our brain. Then, number 4, source 4, you see below the brain, we sort of have the two eyes, which would be the menorah and the shulchan. And of course, what's the function of the menorah? The menorah, of course, is the light. What's the function of the shulchan? The shulchan and the lechem aponim doesn't get consumed. It's there the whole time. And of course, what you need in order to be able to see anything, you need light, and you need there to be something to see. So that's what the menorah and the shulchan with the lechem aponim is. The menorah, one of the eyes, as it were, provides the light. The shulchan, the other eye, as it were, provides something to look at. The lechem aponim, that's on show. Those are the two eyes. You've got the eyes, they've got the brain at the top. Beneath it, you have the menorah, one eye, which provides the light, and the shulchan with the lechem upon him, something to see. Right beneath that, where the nose should be, you've got the mizbeach haketoros. And of course, how do we relate to ketoros? Smell it. Right beneath that, we have something very long that looks sort of like a mouth. That's the mizbeach on which the karbonos are consumed. What do we do with the mouth? We consume things. We eat. So it seems like a face. If you turn over to source 7, it's a face. We've got the brain at the top, the two eyes, the nose, and the mouth. It's a face. Not only does it look like a face, but the function of each of the things in the Mizbeach, in the Mishkan, seem to line up exactly with the corresponding functions of what, of the functions of a face. It seems like there has to be something here. The question is, what? What do we make of this? What does it mean? So the notion that God has a face obviously is theologically extremely problematic, very scary. We don't believe that God has a face. We don't believe that Hashem has any form whatsoever. You can't touch him, you can't feel him. And I'm not suggesting, obviously, that God has any form whatsoever. But what are we meant to do with this idea that I'm presenting, that the Mishkan, the items of the Mishkan line up very nicely with the features of a face? Now, as crazy as this may sound, if it's true, there seems to be an interesting resonance within Psukim. Because as we know, the Kohanic brachos that Aaron, the Kohen Gadol, and his children would say, and which we say to our own children, which actually was actually said upon the completion of the Mishkan, not in Bamidbar as I quoted, but in Shemos, Yivarecha Hashem v'yishmarecha, Yoeh Hashem panav eilecha v'yichunecha, Yisa Hashem panav eilecha v'yasem lecha shalom. Hashem will shine his face upon you. He'll lift up his face. Very interesting that in those brachas, the face, Hashem's face, is mentioned twice. Now, of course, we always understand that metaphorically, because, of course, Hashem does not have a face. We always understand it to mean that Hashem should in some way turn towards us, pay attention to us. Hashem should grant us serenity and peace. But it does seem that there's no coincidence that this is the bracha that Aaron and his children first said to the Jewish people upon the completion of the Mishkan. Maybe, the Mishkan on some level is Hashem's face in this world. What do I mean by that? Of course, it's not to say that the Mishkan is part of Hashem. Of course, that's not true. It's just a building. But if you think about who you are you your face? Or is your face really just a building, a place of residence for what you really are? Which brings us to a different question. Who are you? Who are we? Which is what we're going to ask right now. So source 9, the Pasuk says, V'asu li migdash v'shachanti besocham. Make me a migdash, a holy place, and let me dwell amongst you, Hashem says. But of course, there's another theological problem with this. There's a problem with that notion, the notion of Hashem dwelling amongst us. What does that mean, Hashem dwells amongst us? One of the most often questions I get as a rabbi working in Seed from a variety of people who approach me, one song, no matter your religious level, it seems that everybody knows, is Uncle Moishi's song. Hashem is here, Hashem is there, Hashem is truly everywhere. And they ask me, what does that mean? Right? Is Hashem here, there, and everywhere? And when we, when we actually subject that song to critical analysis, is Hashem really everywhere? So, you might say that Hashem sees everywhere. You might say that Hashem's influence is everywhere. But the notion that Hashem is actually everywhere, that in the tree is Hashem, in the grass is Hashem, in the table is Hashem. If you take it literally, Uncle Moishe's song, that's actually pantheism. The notion that God is immanent everywhere in the world is pantheism, and pantheism is something we don't normally associate with Judaism. For example, if somebody was to bow down to a tree, we call that idolatry. But why should it be idolatry? If God is in the tree, if God is everywhere, and he bows down to the tree where God is in, that's not idolatry, that's bowing down to Hashem. So the question is, where is Hashem? Where is Hashem? If he's not everywhere. So, classical Judaism does, of course, reject the notion of pantheism, with the idea instead of God's Kedusha, Hashem's holiness. What is holiness? What is Kedusha? It's separateness, separate. Hashem is separate. He's ultimately separate from the world. The angels in Kedusha say, Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzavakos. Hashem is separate, 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 the Lord of hosts. Aye makom kavodo, they ask. Where is the place of his glory? So even the Malachim, the most transcendent beings that there are, can't find the place. Yes, it's true. In Kedusha, we do say, kavodo male olam. The Hashem's glory, as it were, fills the world. Yeah, Hashem's glory fills the world. Evidence of Hashem fills the world. His influence fills the world. His influence. But Hashem himself, Ayei Mekom Kavodo. Where is Hashem? Where is Hashem? What's the source of all of that? What's the place it all comes from that eludes all creatures? And there is a reason that it eludes all creatures, precisely because we are creatures. We are things that Hashem has created. We live in the fishbowl of Hashem's making, and it's very hard for the fish, his creations, to see outside the fishbowl. Well, I once had a conversation with somebody who professed to be an atheist. Professed. Had many such conversations in my line of work. And he was complaining that he didn't see God in the world. And that if God was truly around, then how comes he didn't see more of him? Now, there's many ways to approach this question. And depending on who the person is, and depending on where I think his issues lie, you can give many different approaches. This is just one of them. I gave the following analogy to him. I said, you know what you remind me of? You know, on a good Monopoly board, there's these icons, many icons in a Monopoly board. Take the little hat and the little shoe. So imagine a conversation between the little hat and the little shoe. One day the little hat says to the little shoe, do you believe in Parker? Little shoe says, what do you mean, do I believe in Parker? So little hat says, well, you know, right there on the board, it says made by Parker Brothers. Do you believe in Parker? And little shoe says, of course I believe in Parker. Little hat says, you know, let me tell you something. I've been around on this game board for a long, long time. I go around the board every day, every week. I've seen it all. I've been to jail, I've been to free parking, I've been to Pall Mall, Leicester Square, Trafalgar Square. I've seen it all. And you know what? I've never run into Parker. He's not here. I don't believe in Parker. What do you say to little hat? You say, little hat, do you really expect to meet little Parker on the board? Parker is the creator of the board. You live on the board with little shoe and all the other icons, but Parker made the board. He made the board. Obviously, the one who made the board isn't going to live on the board. The board is its own game. It's its own little world. The maker of the game is obviously in a different realm altogether. It's kadosh, it's separate from the boards. And that's Hashem. Hashem is kadosh, separate from our world. And this, of course, leads to the problem. How can it be that there is such a thing as a mikdash, a mishkan, a sanctuary in which Hashem can dwell in a world? How can there be such a thing? Hashem is out of the world, and yet there is a mikdash, a mishkan, in which he's meant to dwell in this world. So one of the words we have for Hashem, we know, is makom. God is the place. It's a very difficult concept. What does it mean, Hashem is the place, makom? So Chazal tell us in Bereishis Rabbah, because he is the place of the world, but the world is not his place. That's quite a mind-bending concept. He is the place of the world, but the world is not his place. What does that mean? What does that mean? What it means is that the world is not his place. The idea of a place is in an environment for something. Hashem's environment is not this world. Can't be. He doesn't live in this world. So where is Hashem? So he is the place. He is the place. He is the place of this world. If you would imagine this entire world, space and time itself, what is the vessel, so to speak, that holds space and time. That is Hashem. It's almost like Hashem surrounds our universe in a non-spatial, non-temporal way. He holds it. Hashem himself doesn't live within the universe of space and time. Hashem lives in a kadosh realm, an entirely separate realm. So what does it mean then that Hashem could live in a world in a mikdash? And maybe the schematic of the Mishkan, the face, gives us the answer. What is Hashem's answer, as it were? And what he says is, I can't explain to you how this paradox works, but I can show you how this paradox works. Because the same problem that you have with my presence, as it were, manifesting itself in your physical world, that same problem you have with me, you also have the same problem with yourselves. And you experience the same paradox every day in your own being. Because let me ask you a question. Who are you? Who are you? Human beings, who are you? What makes you you? I'm Adam Edwards, but which bit of me is Adam Edwards? God forbid, if I was to lose a finger, am I still Adam Edwards? What makes me me? In my most innermost part, what is me? So most of us, when we really begin to think deeply about it, would say that our sense of self is really associated with our mind, our consciousness, that thinking, feeling part of us. What bit is that? Our brain. Well, kind of associated with our brain, but our brain, again, is something physical. Is our sense of self really something physical? And we sense that our minds are more than something physical. It's almost like our brain is a machine and we're the driver, almost like there's a cloud hovering over our brain. Something we can understand when we think about the digital cloud that all our computer things are stored on outside of the computer. So until we have this cloud hovering over our brain where our sense of self is stored. Clouds hovering over our brain. Interesting. What does the Torah say about where Hashem is in the Mishkan? Ki ba'anan ere ala kaporas. I will appear in a cloud hovering over the ark. What was the Aron? The Aron was the brain. It has the luchos in it. We relate to it cognitively. Hashem says, as it were, make me a face, and I will dwell amongst you. I am an entirely separate spiritual being. But you know what? You human beings too. You created B'Tselem Elohim in the image of Hashem. You too are spiritual beings. Your neshamas, your consciousness hovers like a cloud above your brain. Now, can you understand how this entirely spiritual thing, how that connects and relates to your very physical body? In some sort of way, the mind connects with the brain seamlessly, but it's not identified with it. It's as if there is a spiritual cloud hovering above the brain. You experience it every day with your own face. And Hashem says, I will connect to the world the same way you connect to your own bodies. And maybe that's the message of the Mishkan. That as crazy as it seems for a being that's outside of space, outside of time, to somehow inhabit the world of space and time. To somehow inhabit that space, it actually happens. And more than that, we can actually help to make it happen. We can create something. We can create a Mishkan, a place for Hashem in our world, and invite God in, and it actually works. Can we understand it? No. Does it make sense? Absolutely not. it makes just as much sense as how our own sense of consciousness inhabits our own face. Can we understand it? No. Is it real? Very much so. And Hashem's presence in our world is equally as real too. So, I was thinking that as we approach Purim, and as we approach Be'ezras Hashem, the end of these very difficult times that we've been experiencing, I don't know about this part of London, but in Edgware, where I live, you know, shuls have been decimated over the last year. Shuls and schools have been decimated. You know, we have no Mishkan, we have no Beis HaMikdash. But maybe our task at some level remains the same. The Mishkan teaches us not to be intimidated, not to give up on inviting the transcendent God into our world. It can happen. We can invite the Almighty, Kodesh Baruch Hu, into our world. And now is the time to start making the effort to make a place for Hashem back in our world, to invite Him back into our shuls, back into our homes, back into our lives. And we somehow have to find the space for Him to enable us to do so. Good. Wishing you all a very, very Freilichen Purim. Yeah, it's not a place.